let's talk for and about the LGBT communities around the world. I'm Michael Ross, and this is Straight Friendly. Many years ago, when I just entered the LGBT communities, if we can say it that way, I've heard about the feminist movement and about the lesbian and queer and LGBT feminist movements. And one of the names which I always heard about was Hannah Safran, who is a hero for many people that I know. In this episode, we will be talking not just about the feminist movement in the way that many of us know about. Usually, if we start reading about the feminist movement, it seems like its history started in the 70s in the United States. Well, the academy has a lot to do with it, but were there any feminist movements or ideas before? Probably yes. Were there also in other areas? Of course, yes. In this episode, we will also be talking about part of her research and activism with other groups, including Palestinian feminist groups and movements in Israel, even dating back to 1948. As Hannah says, it takes time to undo colonial thinking and looking for the sources of that. We will be also talking about how the technology, including dating apps, affected us all, including the feminist circles within the LGBT communities. Do LGBT women don't need feminism anymore? What Hannah has taught the current generations of activists, and what did the new generations of people within the community has taught Hannah? I think that in this episode, it's not only that we're going to answer all of these questions, and I think that this episode can be a really good lesson for all of us. And you know, honestly, sometimes I felt way more comfortable in feminist circles rather than in masculine circles. So we are definitely can learn a lot from this conversation with Hannah. Before we proceed to our episode, just as always, I would like to note that the production of this episode came to reality thanks to the support of the Friedrich Naumann Foundation in Jerusalem. We are definitely going to talk about freedom in this episode. I'm really, really excited about this episode. Today we have with us Hannah Safran. Hello, hello.
Hi.
I've been waiting for a long time to record you. Actually, we've been postponing again and again the date, and finally we have opportunity to record. So thank you very much for being with us, Hannah. For a long time, I wanted to make an episode, a general episode about feminism. And you're one of the most prominent activists which I had the opportunity to meet about this subject, and so many people, once I told them that I'm gonna interview you, they told me that you are a hero for them. I heard it from many women, mainly, but not only, and I thought that it can be a wonderful opportunity for us to get and to know a bit more about you and also about your activism. Our listeners are located all around the world. And before we'll dive in into some of the questions I have, I would like to start with a story which you told me once we met at that coffee shop while we were preparing for the interview. And I was asking you about your book, and you told me that you felt like many of the activists which you were working with, they had to know more about feminism. So you decided to make one book where you could make it all the information to be way more accessible, right?
From a history point of view, it's not, you know, everything about feminism, which is not possible in one book anyway. But this particular one is about the history of feminist activism in Israel in the 20s, before the state, and in the 70s, when new feminism came around.
And I think that this example is very interesting, because I remember that while I was a student, I had a course, an introduction course for feminist history. And very similar to the LGBT history and many other stories, somehow it almost always starts with the USA.
Yes, it's true.
And I think this is something really interesting about your point of view, because you're not necessarily starting only from the USA. You're talking also about the 20s, which is in...
Here. In Palestine.
In Palestine and in Israel. So tell us, please, when did it start? Where did it all begin?
It begins with women being in the world. You know, there is always a struggle to survive as people, not necessarily women. Women and men living in the world are struggling to survive or enjoying their survival, depends where they are and how much colonized they are and who controls the environment and the area they live, obviously. There is a reason why in the West, the history of feminism is very much focused on the US, England, maybe some European countries, and not about the rest of the world. Because feminism as a theory, as a history, as something that we can learn about, is started in the West, particularly in the 70s.
In the
1970s, yes, exactly. And there it goes, because it took some time for feminists to themselves, for us, to understand that the history is not only what comes from the West, although it's in books, and you can read it, because it's English, to understand that you have to look for other materials in other places, in other languages, and so on. And sometimes it's not easy, because languages are not available, and so on and so forth. Here in Palestine, it's even more interesting, because in the 20s, the majority of the people in this place were Palestinians. And the minority, very, very small minority, were Jewish people, and some of them were Zionists who came from Europe and really wanted to colonize the country. So which history do you tell? I'm not a Palestinian, and my Arabic is not good enough to go into Palestinian history. So there is always a double history. Today there is another book that one can refer to by a historian whose name is Manar Hassan. She wrote the history of Palestinian women in the last 100 years. So it's easier for me when I'm talking about the history of Jewish women in Palestine and Israel to say, I did what I could, and someone else, my friend Manar Hassan, wrote the history of Palestinian women, not, of course, less important one or the other. So it's very important to, when you look at whose history we're looking at, why we're looking at that history. So feminism as a theory, as a issue that we can teach at the university, needed books and needed thesis, and when you create a new topic at the academy, if you want to go into the academy, you have to establish your worth, that people say, well, this is an academic topic. And most books in the 90s, when it started to in Israel to get into the academy, most books were in English, and most books were about the history of the Western countries, especially the U.S. It takes time to undo this colonial thinking and to look for other sources and to appreciate our own sources. But it happened. It is something that is happening all the time.
And what happened, actually, in the 70s, suddenly the things started to rise up?
I think that it belongs to an historical moment in which many people are not willing anymore to accept the meta-narrative of the West as the source of goodness and so on. Especially in the West itself, many young people, women and men, are not willing to go along with the usual narrative, get married, get a job, get a wife or husband, create children and so on. and they revolt. And this revolution has many aspects. Let's start with our revolution, the idea that gay people, that lesbian and homosexuals and other people that do not follow the major and main sexual narrative, do not want to be harassed by the police and do not want to suffer under laws that are not equal with others. So this is one revolution of the 60s in the US. The other revolution is the feminist revolution. Women are out in the street because they are fed up with the meta-narrative about their life. What they
when did it
do.
Happen?
In the 60s. Cannot say which one is the first one, but it's a time of the 60s, a version of Black Lives Matter. It's when the black people revolt, which they did before as well, but they revolt openly. This revolt starts in the 50s already. Many of you might remember Rosa Parks, the woman who got up in the bus when the buses in the United States were segregated in the South. So it's something that the black community in the United States has been doing ever since they are slaves and they arrive in the United States. They've been revolting all the time. But there are eruptions, there are times in which the revolt becomes central and everybody talks about it and so on. It doesn't mean that revolt doesn't happen all the time. Many people revolt all the time. And in the 60s, it becomes very major. That's very important. The second one is the objection to Vietnam War. The Vietnam War is going on, and people realize that it's killing, and there is no purpose, and why should they go so far away to kill other people, and so on. And there is a big movement against the war. And then the feminists come along and they say we are fed up. Also, there are other reasons around this area. For example, the invention of the pill that allows people to have sex without having children, which might have been a big revolution for women, but women report that men used it to their own benefits and used to argue that because the woman is not worried about becoming pregnant, then they can have sex as much as they want. Anyway, talking about sex in itself is something that was not done before. So this is a big revolution, the idea that there is a pill, that there is something handy that you can use and not become pregnant after having had sex. The beatniks revolution, the music, there is an uprising. This uprising has an effect, a global effect, in different ways, in different places. In Europe, definitely, there is the student revolt of 68 in Paris and in France, and the student managed to get together with the workers' movement, which is not necessarily obvious. And there's a big revolution. There is also effects in many different countries around the world. Maybe at that time or later in Israel, it really started in 71, and there are local reasons why 71, in the early 70s, there are 3 years between wars in which the discussion could move from the politics of war and oppression and colonialism to the politics of social movement, of social change, of what is important for ordinary people. How we should live, and you have two major movements. One is called the Black Panthers, and they are also obviously affected by the and influenced by the American Black Panthers movement, which I didn't mention before, but it belongs and very much to the Black Revolution of the 60s. Young people who refuse to obey to the law of white supremacy, etc., etc. So in the 70s, young people from their origin, the families originated from Arab-speaking countries, and they feel oppressed in Israel. They start a revolution to demonstrate and so on, and the women who suddenly and slowly realized that the myth of equality in the Zionist community is only a myth and not a reality. Because we were all brought up to believe that we live in an equal society and everything is beautiful and so, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to undo your learning. And this starts to happen in the 70s. And then there is a war, the 73 war, the poor war, and then everything is shattered. And it really brings forward to women the fact that their role in society is marginalized and maybe one should do something about it.
Hannah, I would like to ask you, from what you are explaining us, so basically different events happened in the West, in the United States, demonstrations that were led by minorities which are not necessarily related to the feminist movement. And it sounds like there's one direction, like as there's an arrow of like things happen in the US and then it happens in some other countries, either in Israel or in Poland or any other. And my question would be, do also like small countries which were affected by the wave from the US, do they affect each other? For instance, do the things which happened during the 70s in Israel, did they affect the feminist movement or other movements in the countries which surround us? Not necessarily the war, but the movement itself. Or do you find that other countries affected? Is there any relations between the different movements?
Israel is a small country and also very isolated because it lives in the Middle East, but it's not, I would say, native to the Middle East. So most countries around Israel are Muslim or Arab countries. So it's different. The influence is not direct. There is no direct connection. Of course, I'm just speaking now from a perspective of a Jewish woman. I cannot say what had happened in a relationship when you are speaking from a Palestinian point of view or someone who knows Arabic, who knows the history. I think Israel does not have an impact on other countries. It is influenced mostly by the West because it looks up to the West. Also, the academy in Israel is based on the knowledge that comes out of the West. It's not, for example, related to Russia or what used to be the USSR or India and so on. For Israelis to read articles that were written somewhere else, it's only because a Western journal published it. It's not because we're looking up to other countries. This is, for me, a big problem, that all our knowledge comes really from Western sources, because we read English. If you are in the academy, you have to read English. If you are in the academy and you are employed by the academy, if you're a professor or a teacher and so on, you have to publish in English. So who do you read? In order to publish, you have to read the relevant literature. Who would you read? Again, you're sort of caught up in this Western approach, and you tend to ignore other countries and other cultures, which are not less important. So, especially because Jewish Israelis are, on the whole, not speaking Arabic and not knowing to read. Most people don't know to read Arabic, so you're not connected to the Middle East, where we are physically.
Although here, just like in many countries around the world, there are lots of different cultural groups. For instance, there are Russian speakers here or Arabic speakers who, unlike the university and the academy, where the language is English, so in reality, many of the people, their source of information is the media. So either if they live in Israel or in any place in Europe, they might be watching not the Western or not even the local news.
Absolutely. But you have to remember that the 70s are not the 20s in the new century. Yes. In the 70s, the only source you had was the radio. There were people who had a little radio station like yourself. Yes, and they were sending radio waves to the world. But not many. It's the connection between people. I'm not saying the people were not connected. Even in the 19th century, people, we know in the history that women corresponded with each other and organized meetings and so on. And in the 20th century as well, they were able to get together, to organize and so on. It's actually amazing how they did it without telephone, without internet and so on. But the connection were different. Now, people inside Israel, Palestinian inside Israel, can be very well connected with the Arab world. And indeed, they are when they started Aswat, which is the Palestinian gay organization, mainly by lesbians and queer people. They were connected immediately as they started in the early years of this century. They were connected to lesbian all over and gay people all over the Middle East. And they were able to produce books or other material with stories that came from the Middle East. So now the picture is completely different.
If we're just talking also about an organization just as Aswat, so I think we cannot also deny that there is a lot of correlation between the feminist queer female activists and the establishment of some of those organizations, right? I mean, like, there is some connection between being a feminist activist to the fact that Aswat, for instance, was formed, right? Or I'm wrong? Because I know that some of the organizations, especially if we're talking about the Palestinian, I'm not Palestinian, so I will say that I know nothing, okay? But from the bit I know, what I've heard is that actually some of the people who established some of those organizations are actually women. Is it correct?
There are two main organizations that we know of. Aswat, meaning voices in Arabic. And this organization was established by women, by lesbian women. And the other...
But the organizations are not necessarily working only with lesbian women, but with many
now,
more...
Now, you know, in the last 20 years, things have been shifting and moving. And you don't say anymore lesbian, you say queer, or you say gay women, or whatever. I'm from the old generation. I'm 71 now. I'm so used to the word lesbian. It took me some time. It was not easy. I can tell you, nobody wanted to use this word because, you know, it's not very nice to come out publicly and to say that you are a lesbian. But if you didn't say you are a lesbian, you didn't make any political statement because you could say, I live with a woman. So, okay, everybody... or most people would go along with it. But if you say, I was a lesbian, now I am a lesbian, then it was a political statement, and you really made a point for people to listen to something else. Now, this has shifted, not everywhere, but definitely here. And today you say, I'm queer. In Hebrew we say LGBT. In Hebrew it sounds differently.
But aren't we missing something in saying that?
Sorry?
Aren't we missing something when we're not using the political terms?
For me, definitely we're losing, because lahatab in Hebrew or LGBT is something that people are a bit neutral with it. It's a neutral word, you know, and also it came out in a world that some people or some of the establishment or some of the laws except gay people, so it is soft. You can use it and, you know, just get along with it. If you say I'm homosexual or homo, it is still a curse in Hebrew, and I guess in Arabic too.
And in many other languages.
Yes, in many other languages. Yes. So are we avoiding this curse? Okay, I'm easy. Everybody choose what they want, the way they want to present themselves to the world. I feel that as long as we are oppressed as a group, then I'm going to use the word lesbian. And one day my generation will leave this world. I mean, we will die, which is fine. And other people will decide what they want to say and how they want to call themselves. And in different languages, different cultures, people call themselves in different ways. And I trust people to know what is the right way to make progress. What words do you need to call yourself or your movement? What do you want to say? Where? It depends where you are, you know. You might say one thing to your family and one thing at your job place and the other thing to your friends. So I think people have the same strengths and knowledge as individual and as groups to somehow manage to continue the struggle. But the struggle will continue. Because it's a long, long road. It's not going to finish in one generation, that's for sure. So if anyone is happy being part of a struggle, here you are.
We're just about to go for a short break, and one of the next questions I'm going to have to you, Hana, would be, what is that struggle that you're fighting with?
Ah, good question.
Now, if you have any questions for the Straight Friendly Global Podcast, oh, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Just look for Straight Friendly Global. Straight Friendly Global, the podcast. We're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, even on your Alexa device. We are broadcasting and uploading a new episode every Sunday, once every 3 weeks. So stay tuned for the next episodes, and don't forget to check the previous episodes if you haven't heard them so far. Our previous episodes were about the LGBT communities in Poland and in Russia, and we were also talking about being a transgender woman in the business sector. So it's since we have the internet.
I think the internet and the social media have made a revolution, sometimes for the worse, sometimes for the better, but in our, from our perspective, as a community of people who have to struggle, it's made a huge revolution because it allows us to be connected. And the example of Aswat, the Palestinian gay women organization, it allowed them to find each other. So if you are oppressed, as Palestinian you are maybe double oppressed or three times oppressed because you are Palestinian in Israel and Israel oppresses the Palestinian because you are a woman, there is many intersectionality here. So you need a tool to get together, and the internet really made a revolution in this way.
But at the same time, also, the internet has made a different change, which is maybe going back in some way, because that leads me to my next question. We will also talk about the struggles, but my next question would be, how did also the internet, the media, and mainly like the apps and the dating apps affected?
Of course, that goes without saying. It's amazing.
In good way or bad way?
I tend to be an optimist and to look always for the good side of things. So I would say for the better, because it allowed people, especially in small and remote communities, to be connected, not to feel alone. You don't really have to physically be in the main city. You can be far away and still be connected. Very important. In other aspects, it made a change, and not necessarily for the better. For example, the connection between lesbian women and feminism. Before, a woman who wanted to be a lesbian or started to think about loving women and so on might also have looked for feminist organization, because this obviously was a place where women gathered. So it was a good place to join. As the world changed and you could become a lesbian without feminism, then especially from my experience in Haifa, which is a small town in the north of Israel, women do not need feminism anymore. They fall in love, or they decide in many ways to become a lesbian or to love a woman. Not every woman who loves a woman would call herself lesbian because it's a political statement. You have to think about it. When you fall in love, you don't think. You just fall in love and it's wow. And when you realize what it is, then it's double wow because you don't know what to do with it, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, depend where you are and who are your friends and family. But to connect to a community, that's something else. So if you can jump this connection through the internet, you don't have to look for actual people in actual places, then you can also jump the theory. Why is feminist theory and how it belongs to lesbian existence? Because in feminism, we're really looking for freedom. This is the basic for me in feminist ideology, and it's true for men and women. It's true that women are the one that should lead struggle because we are oppressed in this sense, but it is a message or an ideology that really should help both men and women, mainly in issues that are dealing with oppression. Oppression of women, our right to choose our life, not to be killed, not to be raped, not to be harassed. So if you believe that this is the main thing in feminism, then lesbian choice is also part of freedom. To choose my sexuality, to choose whom I would live with or share my life or share my ideals, it's part of being a free person. For men and women.
It sounds from what you've just said that maybe today it's easier being lesbian or understanding. You don't have to think so much maybe as in the past. And don't we think that maybe some of women lose something? You know, maybe it's being less aware. Or actually it's all natural now and so easy. So maybe it's even better.
Yes, it very much depends where you live. It's very difficult to say the lesbian experience. Lesbian experience of whom? Where? I'm sure that someone this moment who is a lesbian in another place would feel and say and experience something else than me. And I cannot talk in the name of other people or other women. As much as I would learn and read and sit hours and listen to testimonies of women around the world, of lesbian around the world, still my experience is different. And the situation now where I live, if you separate lesbian from other issues, if you're not talking about who is the woman, what social status does she have in her society, what rights, how much she is oppressed. Lesbian inside Israel have a wide range of liberties. And they've gained the possibility to be mothers. They have all the support of the welfare system and the medical system. It's not everywhere. On the other hand, Israel is not a place of equality. The rights that I have, the fact that I can get social services and health services and become a mother or otherwise, does not mean that everybody between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River have the same rights. On the contrary, Israel is a place where Palestinians are oppressed. Inside Israel, in the occupied territories, and the women live here, many women live here without citizenship, without rights, without medical rights, and so on. They can't even go to work, let alone become pregnant, or have both women live in relative freedom. So it's not to say that it's not possible. Some of my best friends enjoy this liberty, but it's not universal. This is what I'm saying. I would assume that a woman in Afghanistan in this very moment who is a lesbian would not enjoy freedom, did not enjoy freedom in the past. It's not that something changed because in various places, freedom is something that we have to struggle for. And also here, the fact that I'm relatively living in freedom does not mean that I should not or am not part of a struggle, because for me, the struggle is not a personal one, it's a collective one. As long as women are oppressed, I'm there to fight against that oppression. And it makes me sleepless to think that a woman about 20 minutes from my house is in a prison. She's a Palestinian. She's about to give birth. And she's not released, although she never was in court and she doesn't know why she was in prison in the first place. So at 5 o'clock, I'm going to stand outside that prison and protest the fact that people and women in particular are being denied their freedom. And I think it's important. It's my struggle. I'm doing it for her. Of course, she's in the prison and I'm not. But it's the same struggle. If you care about freedom, you care for the freedom of everyone, everywhere.
What made you to care about freedom, also of other people?
Well, it's a good question. If I knew, it would help us all to create more and more people who are caring for the freedom of themselves, and others. I think it's personal, it's who you are, who your family, etc., etc., but it's also many times you understand that if you don't join other people in the struggle, then you yourself are not free. This understanding might come from many, many reasons. Sometimes you're part of a struggle that happened in the past. Maybe you've won your rights or your place in a society. And then you say, we have won, but other people have not yet achieved what we have achieved. Let's share our experience. Let's join in. Let's continue. And also, you know, there is something very exciting in thinking about us as people, as a human being all over the place, that you're not alone, you're never alone, because humanity is there, and we all have to care to each other. I don't know. I can, if you want a simple question, I can attribute it to my family. We're all in the family, men and women, care about the world and have a world vision. We know how things should be. We have a way in which humanity could follow, and it's all based on love, compassion, equality. We're all born under the same sun. We are all equal. We should strive to make the world a better place. And this is why my feminism is for everyone. Because if it's good for women, good for men. If it's good for Jewish people, it should be good for Palestinians. And one should strive to achieve a better world as much as possible. It's not easy. It's sometimes very frustrating.
Fighting for freedom, basically. That's the thing.
Yes, we're here to, I feel that our mission as people in the world is to make it better. I don't have enough years to see maybe the change, but I can still struggle until my very last breath.
Hannah, before we will finish, and thank you so much, I have my last question. Talking about freedom and also maybe the last breath. That time that we met in that coffee shop and we made the preparation for the interview. So before meeting me, I arrived there and I saw that there was a bunch of women, young women sitting around you. You know, it was like watching some scene from a movie where you see a circle of people sitting, circling the fire, listening to the preacher.
You, of course, exaggerate. I think we were sitting there, hopefully, I believe that we were sitting there as equals.
The fact the that women they are young. I have a lot of respect to you.
Well, the fact that they are young and I'm old is basically a matter of chronology. I'm not responsible for the day I was born, and neither they are. It's lovely to be able to feel equal relationship between different ages, because age is only, really, I believe it's a matter of numbers, the day you were born, etc., etc. But there's so many commonalities between people that we can relate to each other. question may be changed, the world changing, but we can still listen to each other and learn. I learn from young people as much as they learn from me, because I feel equal. If they don't feel equal to me, that's something that we have to maybe to talk about it, because, okay, maybe being old is something that I should benefit from.
What was one of the things that you've learned from the younger generation?
First, I think, and mostly the attitude towards sexuality. The way that the world is not one, you can use your sexuality in many different ways. You can be free with your sexuality, you can talk about it, you can express it. You are allowed as a woman to require a pleasure and desire and be connected with your desires. I think that now people are more open, and the world, society is more open to talk about sexuality. It's very important. And particularly in Israel, sexuality is not something that we've been discussing in the past, and mainly the role and purpose of women in society was and still is to get married and to produce more and more children, so the state of Israel can have more and more soldiers. It might sound harsh, but it's very, very true, very sad. And if you decide to enjoy your sexuality without being a mother, you will be oppressed all the time by your family, by society, etc., etc. So I think young people and young women can teach us lots about sexuality and the enjoyment that comes from sexuality. It's not something that we can suffer. We should suffer. We should enjoy. The use of technology, internet, Facebook, all these things, Instagram, you know, the young not only can teach us, they have to teach us, because they don't know anything. We have been born too early for this technology. So I find young people very willing. Most people that I meet, men and women, are willing, generous, very, very open to help. On the other hand, some people are really terrible. We met yesterday, I was in a tour of a village, a Palestinian village from 48. Israel did not allow the people of this village to come back after the war. And there were a group of young people who really abused us, and later came and made some damage to our cars. So, of course, it's nice to look at the good side of life and society, and to look for hope, and those people who are generous and who are sharing and loving. So anyway, life has got to be lived. So we might as well do something good about the world we live in. So I will keep on trying.
Hannah, thank you very, very much. It was a big honor, and thank you for trying.
Thank you.
Thank you for empowering us all.
For doing all this and make sure that you have all the technology that I look at and admire in order to achieve something which is greater than local.
Thank you very much.
Universal. Thank you.
This was another episode of Straight Friendly Global. You can find more episodes and listen to our podcast on your favorite listening app, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Echo Podcasts, Alexa Media Player, Google Podcasts, and so on.
I am Michael Ross, and this was another production of Straight Friendly Global, the podcast, comes from the house of Mother Has.